to A Jungian and a Witch podcast. I'm your co-host, Molly, the queen behind Queen of Cups Apothecary and your resident witch. This is my dad, Steve, a Jungian analyst with over 30 years experience, a master's in divinity, and a myth expert. Join us as I get the Jungian perspective on a wide range of witchy topics. Hello and welcome back to another episode. Today, Dad and I are talking about creativity. We talk about what this concept is, where it comes from, how do we get into a creative headspace, how do we use creativity and innovation in a society, and a lot more. Along the way, we find out that this concept is millennia old and has been being discussed for as long as humans have been around. So I'm really glad to give us this baseline about creativity, as I'm sure we'll be talking about a bunch of these concepts a lot more as we go forward. I hope you enjoy our conversation, and I'll see you on the other side. All right, Dad, here we are. We're back after our little break here. I was working at two music festivals, so that's why we took a break for a little while. Very, very busy, but I had a really good time and just settling back into normal life. So it's been a little bit chaotic, but it's good. It's good.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Dad's getting ready for a big trip. And
I'm getting ready to head out to the homeland.
The homeland.
And
the mountains. Yeah.
Other than that, you know. My life is boring compared to yours, so.
Well, life is chaos with a four-year-old, so,
and
you know, there's always that.
I like boring. I want boring. at my age.
Nice and calm.
At my age, when something is exciting, it's generally bad news, so.
Aw. Yeah. That's true. But, you know, you're having some good time this summer, so.
Sure.
All right. Well, this week we are talking about creativity and the creative process. So I did some research and I found some science stuff and some philosophy stuff and some metaphysical stuff. And I'm hoping that we can sort of cover some of the bases here and you can help me sort of chime in about what creativity is and where it comes from. And I think that's a really big question that's been asked for a really long time.
Yeah, that's a very philosophical question. Where does creativity mm-hmm. come from? But you're right, it's also a brain science question.
Exactly.
And a psychological question, and it sounds
spiritual
good.
Spiritual question, yeah,
and
too.
Spiritual question, very good. I mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions about it. And so I think I kind of want to start more on the sciencey side and then move into more of the metaphysical side.
Sure.
And I found two really interesting articles, and I guess I'll start with the one that's sort of just kind of interesting. So there was a study, this is from the National Science Foundation, where they had jazz musicians play while they were hooked up to an EKG machine.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's a pretty cool study. And what I like is that they compared the brain imaging of like novice, like people who were starting out playing jazz music, and then people who were like really good, like well-renowned jazz artists. And they were sort of going after this concept of, you know, like right brain versus left brain, and that, you know, left brain thinkers are, you know, analytical and right brain is more innovative. And they were like, this, it has to be more integrated than that. It's this sort of put this generalization on it, but it's way more intricate than that. And so what they found, which I thought was really cool, is that musicians who were more inexperienced used more of the right brain, and musicians who were more experienced relied more on the left brain. It's interesting because it's saying that when we're doing something new, they're saying like that's more where like the learning part comes. So there's like a mix of creativity being like learning and then also adapting, right? These two different things. And so the learning part is more the right brain and the left brain is more the adapting. And so I thought it was really cool that they guess kind of squash that whole concept of the left and the right brain. Because I feel like that's something that's been said for a long time,
It
right?
is, yeah, that the whole concept of left and right brain is sort of falling apart for the last 10 years. Mostly because of, a thing called neuroplasticity, right? That, when they have people that lose half their brain,
Oh, right. They can still like live and do things
they can do
like, right?
things.
That they shouldn't be able to do if they lost half their
And
brain.
the brain adapts, right? The left brain starts doing what the right brain used to do, and or the right brain starts doing what the left brain used to do when it was there. And
Right.
so it's
Pretty
it,
thoroughly
it
debunked
it's
at this point,
it
huh?
would be interesting. I mean, my understanding of the neuroscience is a little bit the concept of neural networks, so that something creative, like the network sort of spans everything, goes everywhere.
Yeah, more comprehensive all over.
As opposed to being discrete tasks that
Yeah, exactly.
theoretically neuroscience, as we said before, the mythology of neuroscience is to see flashing pictures on an CT scan or a PET scan, I guess, in real time. And then a person says, I am feeling angry. Oh, so this is where anger is in the brain, and this is where this is in the brain, and that's the fantasy. And
The fantasy that would be that easy
it
to
would be
just
that
say, this is
easy,
this
and
and that
it
is that.
basically does not work that way. So for creativity, I mean, what we're talking about, neural networks and things like that. I mean, one important concept is the flow concept. Have you ever heard of the, you've never heard of the flow
Like
concept?
getting in the flow, like that thing.
Yes, but it is a specific thing. And then flow. It's a Polish psychologist from the 80s. That's an old book. Flow, that's the name of the
It's
book.
just called flow.
Yes, and I can't pronounce his name. I
Okay, I'll put
apologize.
it in the notes.
And so he was the first to describe the flow state, which is, I mean, we all have that experience, and it is particularly associated with creativity when you are totally into something. You lose track of time. You lose track of awareness of your environment. You lose track of everything because you are in it
In the
and
flow, yeah.
in the flow, and you crank. And it is a particular brain state.
I mean, we talked
And
about brain waves at one point,
right. So the question is like,
in one
well,
of our episodes, but I, yeah.
Alpha,
Sorry,
beta,
you glitched out.
yeah, alpha, beta,
Beta, right?
delta,
Delta.
and
And
theta,
theta, yeah.
the deep theta waves.
The deep one.
I think the delta is the deep one. The theta waves are the
The special ones, right?
special spiritual ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you would say that flow would be theta waves, I mean,
Right, that's what I thought.
so I mean, he aligns, he has a nice little chart, quadrant kind of chart, because it's like, okay, well, if I want to be creative, how do I get myself into a flow
Right.
state? Speaking as the ego wanting to control everything. But so if you can imagine this sort of quadrant chart that
Okay.
has sort of two axes, and on one axis It is things that are boring to you.
Okay. Yeah.
And on the other side is things that are challenging.
Okay.
So right, it's the difference between utterly uninteresting and then challenging,
Right.
right?
Yeah.
And then the other axis is about capacity. So something low capacity, something for which you have low capacity,
Right.
like calculus,
By calculus. Something you just really don't want to
Yes. And then on the other side, things for which you have high capacity, like
Right.
you're in your sweet spot.
Yeah. Art, music, whatever it
This
is. Yeah.
is the thing you do, and you have high capacity. Okay, so
Okay.
that gives you four different combinations of, low capacity, high capacity, low interest, high interest.
Right.
So you can see where one of the quadrants would be you're doing a task that is low interest and high capacity.
Okay. So something you can do really well, but you're not interested in at all.
Right. So
Yeah.
that is boring. That
Right. It's
is
boring. Yeah.
right.
Makes
I
sense.
forget, like you were saying, you have this software thing that digitally touches up photographs
Yeah.
in batches,
In batches. Yeah.
and you could do 200 of them in 60 seconds or something, right?
Yep.
And I would think that's in that you have high capacity, but the
Right.
touching up a photograph is so old hat to you now
Exactly.
that,
It's not interesting at all. Yeah,
right?
exactly.
Okay, so you get
Makes
that
sense.
quadrant, right? Okay,
Yeah.
now then the opposite quadrant would be something that has low capacity and very high challenge.
Okay, so something that I'm really interested in, but I have no idea what I'm doing.
No capacity.
No capacity. Yeah, so I have
So
no idea.
that would be a
Yeah.
very frustrating task,
Situation.
right?
Yeah.
Like
Yeah.
it's a very high level of challenge, and you just
Yeah.
have.
I'm thinking about like plumbing or electrical work.
Okay. See how that. So that's the frustration quadrant.
Yeah,
Okay.
frustration for sure.
Now we move to
Quadrant.
quadrant where the third one is hard because we're getting to the flow state, right?
Okay,
I'll figure out the third one in a minute, but the flow state is
Okay, good.
that quadrant where high capacity meets high challenge.
Challenge. Right. That's cool.
It's like you have all this skill. And then you have a task that requires
A lot of
everything
skill.
you've got and is fascinating, and you're applying. And see, there's the immersive experience, right? There's the you turn on everything you've got to f this really interesting challenge,
Yeah.
and that is flow.
That's the flow. That's cool.
And you
I
would
like
say,
the gradient.
the creative moment is being in flow.
As being in the flow.
Right. So,
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to think of, what your creative moments are like. I'm a writer, I'm in the
Yeah.
middle of my sixth novel or whatever it is. And well, I mean, you know what it's like to be an artist, and
Yeah.
sometimes it's incredibly frustrating
Yep.
and it's very, very slow, and sometimes then you just hit it.
Right.
And then, right? I
It
mean,
just goes, it
I
just
can
rolls, it
write
does itself.
30,
Yeah.
40, 50 pages in 2 hours, 3 hours.
It
I
just
mean,
comes out.
when
Yeah.
you and And of course, that's the payoff, right? That is the that's what feels good. It's like when you have that, then you're like, okay, that was good. I want to do it again. Right?
How do I
And
keep doing this?
it would be great if you could do it every time, but that's not the reality of
No.
being a writer. There's the other, the writer's block thing, right? I mean, there's the thing where you stare at the page for 8 hours and you
You don't know
write
what to write,
two
yeah.
sentences,
And then delete them.
plus then the self-recrimination about, damn it, I just spent 8 hours. You know what I could have done? All these other things I could have with this 8 hours. And I just stared at this screen because I said, no, I'm going to write. I'm committed to this. I'm going to do it.
But it wasn't there.
It wasn't
It just
there that
wasn't there.
day. And see, that's
Yeah. It's
so
tough.
why does it go and why does it
Come. Why does it come?
come?
Why does it
And
come? Yeah.
I would say, like, one of the things about the creative process, then some people talk about incubation.
Okay. You gotta let it
And
incubate.
I at least tell myself on those days when I stare at the screen for 8 hours and don't do anything, that it's not a waste of time, that I'm incubating
Yes,
something.
you're letting it
Right?
incubate.
And I think
Nice.
in general, it's kind of like I'm on this particular chapter right now that I'm on this chapter. It's been a month. I'm on the same chapter.
Oh,
I'm just
wow.
not making my way through it.
Yeah.
And then I have learned over many decades. I mean, I used to just be bullheaded and like, no, I'm gonna
Oh.
stay with this chapter until it's done. And like, no, and
No.
you give it a certain
Yeah.
period of time and you move on.
Right, you go back to it.
And you write the next chapter. You leave, blank spaces to be filled in later. And it is amazing. And then I'll come back to it after a month and like, oh, blah, 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 and it's done. It's like I just
Yeah,
couldn't,
yeah.
my headspace
In that moment in time,
was
yeah.
not there, right? But the incubation part is, I mean, I think it's true that when I'm staring at it partly I know it means the reason I can't write is that it's not cooked yet. I haven't really worked this through,
It's not cooked yet. I like that phrase.
right? Like it
Yeah,
still needs
just
time. It needs to cook,
simmering. Yeah, nice.
right? It's
Yeah,
like
I like that. No, it makes sense.
what am I doing in this chapter? Like, what is it that's supposed to happen? And
What are my goals? Yeah.
how? And again, when I draw a blank, see, I am just not there. It's like it isn't cooked. So, I mean, that would be one aspect of incubation.
Makes sense.
I don't know what kind of things you have found about either you read about the creative process or your own creative process.
Well, my own creative process is a little bit different just because I do so many different things. I'm sort of a jack of all artsy trades. But I tend to be look for inspiration, mostly in astrology and tarot, and then I sort of walk through nature, and then usually the ideas come to me. So but again, I'm doing things that are a little bit different. I don't even really paint that much anymore, as much as I used to. And I tend to get a lot of inspiration based on metaphysical properties of things, particularly for the things that I'm doing, like, intention jewelry and skull painting, stuff like that. I'm looking into the metaphysical concepts of the items that I'm working with, and then finding inspiration from that. So yeah. My creative process is a little bit different, but I do think, looking back at these articles that I found, the one in particular that is from the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy. And
That's my go-to.
that's your go-to?
Yes,
Okay.
highly recommended. Okay.
It's very, very in depth. But I do like some of the way that they phrase these things. I just like this. So I just like this note that they have. Note that the adjective creative can be applied to three kinds of things: a person, a process or activity, or a product, where the latter is taken broadly to include an idea in someone's mind, as in an observable performance or artwork. So I kind of like that distinction, that it's like a person's creative and then the creative process, but then like also the artwork is creative, so that we can look at that word in a bunch of different ways. I also like that it asks some questions that I think that we could talk about. The first thing it asks is, what makes something creative? Is it that it is new? Is it that it's unique? Is it that it must meet some other further condition? And so I thought that that was really interesting, because I don't think that we usually start with definitions. I don't think we started today with a definition of like, what is creativity? Like, you know, it's
good. Yeah.
We feel it, but is it that it has to be something new? Like that question. I also like, it says, must it proceed with rules or without rules? Is it conscious or unconscious? Must it be the expression of a creative agency, or may it be exercised intentionally? That's a little bit different. How does the process manage to produce new things? Can it even be explained scientifically? So I like all these questions that they have here, for sure.
When I do the philosophy part in my classes, like Kant in particular, you know, me and Kant, I have this experience where the students roll their eyes, you know.
Do they?
After, I have like a 2-hour slide presentation and they're sort of done after 10 minutes.
Oh, no.
And I'm having that. I've never had that experience, but now I'm having it in what you just read from the Stanford Dictionary.
Oh, sorry. What?
It's just fun for me to be on the other side.
Right.
It's like, okay, I could stay with one idea that was in there, and then maybe two, and then after that. And that's somewhat what people feel about philosophy. It's like, I can only take so much philosophy.
Right.
It breaks my head. Yeah. Those were all really good questions.
They were.
Yeah,
they're
really good questions. But so I just challenge you, see, now, and you may have a flow state because you have high capacity, to bring it down to earth and you know, our daily lives, or your daily life, or
I guess, yeah, it does come back to what is creativity and how are we creative. I think those two are the most important things. So the dictionary doesn't really help us very much. It just says the use of imagination or original ideas.
Sure.
Yeah, it has to be an original idea, but I think it's just sort of this widely used concept. I think creativity could be used consciously and unconsciously. I think it comes from a wide variety of areas, but and then how are we creative is tough too, because people can be creative in so many different facets. You can be creative at work. You can be creative via music and art, but you can also be creative and the way that you get something done, the way you mow your lawn, you can do it differently than other people do, you know? So it's such a big thing to take on. But I think we do, that flow state is also really important that we had talked about. Here they have a quote from Schopenhauer that says,
Schopenhauer.
Schopenhauer, yeah.
Yes.
The greatest artists are distinguished not only by the technical skill they employ in the production of art, but also by the capacity to lose themselves in the experience of what is beautiful and sublime. So we're going back to that ability to like get into a certain headspace when we're being creative. And then my question would be like, how do we get into that headspace? And
right,
so
right.
I looked at another article is from Scientific American, and they sort of go after the old adage of necessity is the mother of invention. They go through, I'm going to link it. It's literally called Where Does Creativity Come From? The article. They sort of go through and talk about a bunch of different studies that have been done. But what they come to the conclusion of is that it's not necessity is not really where we're coming from, because when we're in a point of necessity where we're not having our like basic needs met, there is no way for us to be creative because we're so hyper focused just on living that the creativity aspect isn't there. They did studies with like orangutans and various bird species and stuff. Only when they were in a state where they weren't worrying about getting food or building nests, reproducing, were they able to actually do things in a way that was new and different and innovative.
Sure. In other words, anxiety
Right, anxiety.
is antithetical to feeling creative.
Exactly.
And you're likely to feel stuck. So you think about, I don't know, you're taking a class at school, you have to write this paper, you have until 8 o'clock tomorrow morning to
Right.
hand this thing in. And that pressure doesn't help.
Be
Exactly.
creative. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You're not
You
going to
just.
do something new and innovative. You're just going to get it done.
And I've known several people who went to art school. And my brother went, he made it 1 year, freshman year, to art school. And he was an artist, your uncle, And
He was a really good artist, too.
he was a really good artist. Yeah. And he hated it. He hated art school with a passion.
Having a deadline.
Having a deadline and then being assigned to, go to the junkyard, find an old object and
Paint
produce a
it or something.
sculpture by Thursday.
Right. He didn't like the boundaries.
He did not like the boundaries and the anxiety, see, of deadlines.
Yeah, I can understand that for sure.
I would say, right, how do you get in the headspace without anxiety, to even have a shot? And it's a little bit what you were talking about, walking around, taking a walk.
Yeah, exactly.
That's called mind wandering, or that's a
Mind
term,
wandering.
is allowing your mind to just wander around. And then people say, that's a waste of time. It's like that's
Like the incubating.
I'm sorry, I'm being creative now. I can't do that now. I can't do the dishes. I can't. I'm being
I'm being
creative.
creative. Yeah. There's a time and a place for both. Yeah.
There needs to be. I've always liked the story of Walt Whitman. You know who Walt Whitman is? The
Oh, of course. Yeah, the poet.
poet
From our neck of the woods.
and the greatest maybe American poet I think ever
I like Emily Dickinson better, but
in the 19th century, and they were both in the 19th century.
yeah. They were
But
friends.
Walt Whitman wrote a famous article in the newspaper, which he was a newspaper man when he had a job, which was not most of the time he didn't have a job, but sometimes he had a job, called Loafing,
Loafing.
in
That's a good
which
word. I'm gonna bring that word back.
he starts up the article as, "I am the world's greatest loafer." And it is hilarious. It's online. Just
Gonna have to look it up.
Whitman on loafing, and
A
you'll
loafing.
see the original article. And he goes through and he outlines, the 10 best things about loafing.
Nice.
It's
You need the ability to do that, though, you
he
know?
he loafed a lot in the sense that he just walked around, like you were saying. So,
Yeah. Just walked around.
he was, living in Brooklyn at the time, and one of my favorite poems of Whitman is "On the Beach at Night Alone."
Oh.
Okay, and there are two. They have the same title. He was very creative. He can do whatever. It's like, yeah, I have another poem that I'm going to call "On the Beach at Night
Same
Alone."
title.
Also, yes, that's
Oh,
Whitman.
breaking the rules. That's awesome.
That's Whitman for you. It is. I think mine is the one I like best is the second one, but he literally just, left his house, walked around Brooklyn, got out on the beach, and just sat there all night,
Just sat there all night, just looking.
looking at the stars, listening to the waves. And then, he couldn't work because he stayed up all night. So then he went home and went to bed and slept all day.
And wrote a poem about it.
But then see the genius that is in that poem is quite impressive. From loafing around. And that's what Whitman did, but it's all cooking. It's all cooking inside of him and becomes the material for Leaves of Grass, right? He didn't even feel
Yeah,
like
exactly.
he should publish, several poetry books. He just kept adding
To the one.
to the one over, I think it was 30 years before you get the final version of Leaves of
Leaves of
Grass.
grass.
And then one more story about Whitman and loafing in that he was then at that time, at the time the Civil War started, living in New Jersey and without a job, job, didn't have anything to do. And so he's just sort of thinking, well, there's a war. Wow, I think I'm going to go to Washington, D.C. and see what it's like
Oh, really?
during the war.
Yeah, I'm just
Seriously.
gonna see what it's
And
like. All right.
he just started walking again from New
Right,
Jersey.
just walking.
He
Oh, I miss when you had to walk everywhere. That must have been nice.
had enough money to get the train,
Okay.
and he ends up getting all of his money stolen on the railway platform at
Oh, no.
Union. He arrives at Union Station,
Union Square. Oh, wow.
in Washington, D.C., and
Oh,
has
yeah.
all his money stolen. So he arrives in Washington, D.C., penniless,
Right.
with no
What's
job,
he gonna do?
no nothing. Well,
No, nothing.
he knew how to do odd jobs and would make enough to get a sleazy hotel room for a week
There you go.
and walk around
That's right. And walk and
and
walk and
just
walk.
look at what was going on. And then he sees the hospital, the hospital for the wounded soldiers. It was in Washington, the biggest hospital. And he walks around the hospital. He just walks in.
Wow. Yeah, they didn't have security back then. You just
And
walk
then
in.
he sees, all the suffering and what is going on. And then he just goes every day to the hospital. And he talks to the soldiers in
Talks
the
to people.
bed, and then
Oh.
he writes letters for them. They can't write, he writes
Yeah.
letters
Letters home for them and
and
stuff.
mails them, and then the correspondence comes back and then reads them the return letters. And he just ends up, he works in the hospital for as an orderly, then unpaid volunteer
Wow.
for I think it's at least a couple years. He does that.
Wow. I didn't know that. I didn't realize he made his way out of New England. I thought he just bumbled around here the whole time.
He just, I think you're thinking of Thoreau, by the way.
Maybe. But no, Leaves of Grass, I know. I know Leaves of Grass
Right.
pretty well.
Whitman is from Brooklyn. That's where he's
Oh.
born. And he died in New Jersey because he went back to New Jersey.
And who am I thinking about with Walden Pond? Who's
Yeah,
Walden Pond?
that's Henry David Thoreau.
That's Thoreau.
Yeah.
Okay. I am
Which
confusing
is
them.
all, you're right, it's in the same sphere because those guys, that is the transcendentalist movement.
Right.
And they were all poets within that
They were all
movement,
friends, right?
of
Yeah.
which, I'm
Acquaintances, maybe
sorry,
not friends.
less than acquaintances. When Whitman first published Leaves of Grass, he sent a copy to Thoreau.
Okay.
In Boston. And
Yeah.
then Thoreau wrote back a letter and said, well, we'd have to talk about it. I just don't know. And then
I just don't
in the
know.
next, because it was creative out there poetry, right?
And yeah, then, yeah, so I knew it was.
In the next edition, Whitner puts the endorsement of Leaves of Grass.
I just don't know.
But no, that he loved the book in the endorsement.
Okay.
And when Thoreau saw that, he was really pissed off because
he didn't say that.
So, well, but he responded. So see, that's an endorsement.
That's an endorsement.
See,
that's funny.
That's is a million stories about Whitman, but it is that, I call it bumping into things is a part of inspiration, right?
Right. Yeah, so the sparks of ideas,
which
yeah.
is kind of like loafing, you know, watching YouTube all day is like loafing.
Kinda.
And then am
but
I
it's not letting your brain rest. It's not the same as Walt just out there.
That's true.
Walking around.
But what am I doing? I'm just bumping into things. And it's like, because I feel a little bit interested in it and I want to learn something, but where does it go? What's going to become of it in my creative process? I don't know. But then sure enough, 2-3 years later, I'll say, oh yeah, see, and then it's there. When I'm writing this chapter, it's like, oh yeah, I remember that now, that thing that I bumped into.
Bumping into things.
I wasn't looking for
it. I like that concept. Yeah, right? Yeah.
And that's inspiration too.
Yeah. Well, and that kind of leads into another concept that I really did like from this Scientific American article, because they talk about, so evolutionary biologist Joe Henrich of the University of British Columbia wrote a book about the role of culture and then in the success of creativity. And he says, I think the idea that innovation depends on individual geniuses is misguided. History shows us that inventions invariably build on earlier findings that are recombined and improvised on. Most of the things we use every day are innovations that no single human being could ever design within one single lifetime. I like that idea as well, that it's not, he ends it with, innovation relies on individuals learning from each other in a way that human society functions like a collective brain. So, and then I think that goes along with the way that you're saying we bump into things, right? So it's, I mean, there's also like this thing that there's like nothing that we create is ever unique because everything's always built off the previous version of it. Or so we bump into these things and we find it and we mix it up and we spit out something that's different, but it's based on something else that we've seen, we've heard, we've bumped into. So I like that idea that it's all expanding outward as we grow as a culture and society, and as we get smarter and we do things in different ways and we get more connected, and then we bump into more things, right? And we learn about different cultures and the ways that different people do things. And then all of a sudden this new, you know, thing comes out, but that new thing isn't exactly new because it's just been sort of reorganized.
Yeah, I can see that. There's a little bit of, like the guy who wrote Collective Brain, right? I mean, that I would say he's an extrovert, for instance.
he's an extrovert.
Yeah. And I think it might be a bit different for an introvert. You know, that's one thought. But
okay,
in one of my not novels, the main character talks about the idea of the great conversation. The dialogue of history, and
the great conversation
that she, as an artist, wants to be part of the great conversation. So that is the idea that, yeah, things we are talking about are from Plato and Socrates.
Yeah.
And we're still having that conversation.
Right.
Right.
It still hasn't been answered, quote unquote,
right.
Like answered.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a little bit, I think, what you were talking about is that that was a long time ago. They were also building on what came before them.
Right.
You know, you know the pre-Socratic philosophy and all that.
Yeah.
And then, but we're still having the conversation. And then I would say inspiration-wise, I mean, right, I've been
Mm-hmm.
having a conversation with Immanuel Kant for the last 4 years, right? Like
Oh, yeah.
really looking, really with his eye and then questioning it and but then it is inspiring, quote, new things
Right.
in me. But it is true, like what you say, without the dialogue of history, I wouldn't even have the inspiration, so it's not new.
Exactly. It's something different, something more.
So that's part of it. I want to go in the other direction. So let's say that one aspect of creativity, whether it's philosophers or innovators, I'm making the latest iPhone and I have a new idea, or
Okay, yep.
Steve Jobs, it's like,
Oh, right.
why should
Yeah.
we have buttons on the phones like this? Like, how about let's invent a touch screen. You
A
don't
touch
need a
screen.
button. Like the image is the actual button, and you touch it, but it isn't the real
And you
button,
touch
and it
it.
doesn't work. I mean, then that's innovation, right? And that's highly
Yeah.
creative. And okay,
You get that.
I think that part of putting yourself in the space, in addition to the stuff we've talked about and walking about, is the studio, the artist's studio,
Oh, yeah,
is
that's
inspiring, or it so
facilitative.
facilitative. That's a good word. In the Confessions book, there's in the chapter on the opus, there's a lot about the studio. So that, like, from a Jungian perspective, it is the outer expression of an inner reality.
That's a lot about
So,
my office.
well, everybody's my cave here.
Our caves, yeah, we both have caves.
And right, I have the stuff in front of me that I choose to have in front of me
Yeah, you
to
do.
create the mood, create
Facilitate the creative endeavors,
the
yeah.
space, and that every artist has a studio, and it is in general fairly unique. I mean, it's unique to you. Your studio
Right.
might not be very inspiring to me, and vice
True.
versa. Like I'm thinking of, Gustav Mahler. He took a vacation every August, the whole month of August, from his day job. See, I mean, he's Mahler. He has to have a day
He still
job.
had a day job.
Day
Yeah.
job. He was the conductor of the Vienna Opera. That was his day job.
Oh, that was
His
his day job. Well, it's a good day job.
right conducting operas. But since you see the high capacity, okay, high capacity that he does
Right.
this all
Yeah.
day long for a living, and he knows Wagner
He
inside
knows,
out and
yeah.
Puccini, and I mean he's lives and breathes that, and it's probably boring to him that he's doing Wagner
Right.
for the 10th
Again.
time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like so he takes the whole month of August off, and he goes to this little house up in the mountains in Austria
Sounds
with
quaint.
a shack, and I don't know if he had it built there. He might have had it built. Not a large shack, like smaller than
My house?
your shack. No, your
Oh, my shed.
shed.
My shed. So like
Right,
10 by 20.
smaller. And again, see, there's no radio, there's no CDs,
TV.
there's just the sound of
Instagram.
the mountains, and
Ah, lovely.
that's where he composed. And so, see, that was his studio.
Right.
And his studio was apparently kind of bare, and that's what worked for him, see?
Yeah. If that's what you need.
So
Yeah.
I
I like that. The space is definitely important for getting yourself in the headspace. Like you said, the outer world versus the inner world, it makes a lot of sense.
Okay,
Makes a lot of
so
sense.
here's a thing that relates to that. The headspace is, according to the psychoanalyst Douglas Winnicott is the play space.
Play space.
Being creative is the ability to enter into play. And that,
I like that distinction.
Whether you're being an artist entering into play or a four-year-old entering into play, right, it's the same space, same inner space. And that Winnicott had a lot to say about the play space,
space,
because Winnicott was a pediatrician before he became an analyst. So he was always so interested in children and trying to understand children and the inner lives of children. So he made a Venn diagram of fantasy and reality.
Oh, okay.
So if you can imagine, fantasy is the fantasy space on the inside.
Right.
And that obviously that's part of play is.
Right.
Entering into fantasy.
Imagination. Yeah.
Imagination, fantasy, things that are not real in terms of reality.
Yeah. Quotes, quote unquote, real. Yeah.
Right. And then reality is sort of as Freud, he was, you know, a neo-Freudian, Winnicott, wanted to talk about, you know, adaptation to reality. The reality principle is that, again, that's part of how we grow and mature, is that, sure, we're little kids, but over time, you're smacked in the face by
the reality,
the rock wall of reality.
Right, yeah.
And that... Yeah. The adapting is what makes a strong ego. Okay. Yeah, so
makes sense.
If you imagine the Venn diagram, Winnicott said the play space is where the two overlap.
Oh.
That's the play space. If you only have one or the other, nothing happens. So if you only have the fantasy space, it remains a fantasy. It's just a fantasy.
No.
It isn't creative in that sense because it doesn't go anywhere.
Right. It doesn't materialize.
If you are, we'll use the Freudian term, an anal type person.
Okay.
And the only space you can get yourself in is reality. Then
there's no creativity.
You are stiff and dead and bored.
Yeah, because there's no imagination. Yeah.
So the Venn diagram, the overlap.
Yeah, I love that.
Of that, I have dreamed of this. I have, and now I'm actually doing it.
See, right.
That's the Venn where the two overlap.
Put together.
You know, that's the play space. So, I mean, you'd have to talk about your own art or things like that. And I would say also that gets a little bit back to flow, right? It's that where high capacity meets high challenge. And that's
right. You
know, realities is the high challenge.
High
I would say that, you know, many people fantasize about writing a novel, let's say.
True.
Mm-hmm. Like many people have an idea like, oh, you know, I.
Right. That it would could make be a good novel.
It could be like this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fantasy.
Exactly. And then actually writing the book
it is a very different thing.
It is, yeah.
You can fantasize about the novel all day and it never becomes a novel.
Yeah.
And also the process of actually extracting words, sentences, paragraphs.
Mm-hmm.
Is the creative process now, right? Because not now the fantasy is becoming reality. It's like, well, you have to, right, there's craft and there's art in how you shape a sentence, how you shape a paragraph, how you shape a chapter. I mean, it all goes in there. I would say once I start writing in general, right, the book takes on a life of its own and it's never really what I thought it was in the fantasy.
Right, exactly.
It kind of, is it coagulates into something real, it takes on a life of its own and goes in different directions and things. And again, that's the creative process. It's like, okay, it wants to go here, and I'm going to let it go there. Yeah. And now I'm surprised by what is happening in my own
novel.
That's my favorite quote as a writer, from Shakespeare in Love, the movie.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Gwyneth Paltrow, you know, is mm-hmm. playing this love interest, but because she's a woman, she can't be an actor. She's impersonating a man.
A man.
And so she is Romeo
in Romeo and Juliet.
That's what Shakespeare in Love is, the right actual writing and first performance of
Romeo and Juliet. I haven't seen it since it came out in the 90s.
Juliet. So they're rehearsing the first act, in which you may remember that Romeo has a girlfriend and he loves her, and they're dancing to the music. And then, Gwyneth Paltrow is trying to prove herself, you know, that I can be Romeo, I can do it. And she's being very intense with this love interest.
Right.
And in rehearsal, right? And
in rehearsal. Yeah.
And Shakespeare gets up and says, no. In the next act, you're going to meet the love of your life. You have to save it for that.
Yeah.
And she says, oh, sir, I'm sorry, I have not read the second act. And he says, oh, that's because I have not written it. And he goes up and see his inspiration. He goes up in his studio and out comes the second
writes
act.
Writes it out.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's so much like a writer. It's like, oh, right. That's because I have not written it.
Oh, it hasn't materialized yet.
You have to actually do art.
The work.
Ask me, I mean, one of my characters who had a 30-year-long writer's block
said, that
for 30 years I did nothing but talk about writing, think about writing, read about writing. Mm. And then I discovered the only way to write is to actually write.
Actually, to sit down and do it.
Yeah.
I love that. And it kind of reminds me of the crystallization of the archetypes as well.
Yes.
Because it's like you have this idea of what you think it should be, or what you have this grasp on a cloud, like something that is not material. And then you're like, okay, well, we're going to materialize it. And then it's like you're starting with Play-Doh, and you're going to like make something. And in the end, you're like, this doesn't look at all like what I thought it would be. I was making a cow and it's a horse, you know? so we can all learn from our Play-Doh days.
Art therapy.
Works
like that too, is that, you know, people say, well, I can't paint. You know, I'm not an artist. Mm-hmm. I can't do this. Like, yeah, you can.
I'm really good at abstract painting.
Right. So, I tell people, all you need to do is pick a color.
Mm-hmm.
The one color that you like the best. Pick it. Sure. Put it on the brush. Take the brush. Put it in the middle of the paper and just start swirling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you would be, every time.
Yeah.
Like as you swirl it, then imagination takes over and it's like, it starts to look like something. And then you add the features and then it develops and it's
and then it turns into something.
Crystallizing out of the archetype. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. All right, Dad. Well, I think that we've had a really lovely discussion on creativity. It's also fleshed out some other ideas I think we might cover in future podcast episodes as well. But I think it was a really nice toe dip into this concept that we've realized is been going on since the beginning of human history. But we can talk more about it next time. And I appreciate you being here with me. And we'll be back next week.
That's great. This is fun.
Thanks, Dad. Well, thank you so much for tuning in. I appreciate you listening to our conversation on creativity.
And I really hope that you can take some of these ideas and put them into your own creative practice. As always, feel free to reach out to us at ajungianinawitch@gmail.com with any questions you might have and any questions you might want Dad and I to answer. You can find out more about us at ajungianinawitch.com. You can also find out more about me, Molly, at queenofcupsapothecary.com, and find more from Dad at his YouTube channel, History of Ideas. So thanks so much again. We appreciate you tuning back in after our little break, and we'll be back next week with another topic.